Session number 26590, General Wilhelm Moore, Reel 6.
You were comparing the Spitfire and the Hurricane, saying the Hurricane is not as manoeuvrable as the Spitfire, but quite manoeuvrable.
Oh, yes.
And it was good for delivering bombs to the ground.
I yeah, think. But mind you, during Battle of Britain, I mean, there were more Hurricanes than Spitfires. And I suppose if you count up the results, the more Hurricanes shot down more airplanes than Spitfires. I wouldn't take that for as a fact, but it can be checked up. And I think.
Yeah.
But the Hurricanes were really taking the brunt.
Yes.
Because there were more on them than Spitfires also on the entry.
What did it feel like when it was when you were flying it? Was it?
Well, the Hurricane was a little more heavy, as I say. It took a little more strength on maneuvering and so on. But then the Spitfire had, if you got into a steep sort of speed dive and that sort of thing, then it got very stiff on the rudder too. And but it was a snug airplane, it really was. Beautiful. You know, there were two types of pilots in the Royal Air Force, in the fighter side and so on. But those who had flown the Spitfires and those who wanted to fly the Spitfires. that crept on. You know.
Everybody wanted to be a Spitfire pilot.
Yeah, they did. That was really the aim.
How did
But I would say that we, for example, as I come back to you on the 615 squadron, we wouldn't have changed it. The Hurricane was doing the superb job. But you didn't really expect to get into combat with it. With the other airplanes, and it was taking a beating from the anti-aircraft side, and the Hurricane was a strong airplane. It could take a lot of beating and still come home. You know, so you felt that you had a good airplane on your hands. Mm. Yes.
On the flying characteristics, how did the Hurricane compare with the P-35, the American plane you'd been flying?
Well, we preferred, mind you, the P-36 was a very good airplane, and it had longer range. For example, well, of course, we never used that in Britain, but that was a disadvantage with both Hurricane and Spitfires, that there were limited range. And as time went on, you had to hang on underslung a few tanks. Then they became less maneuverable.
Yes,
and heavier, and if you got into something, you've got to drop them. Mm. So you've got to consider getting back too, you know, and so on. So this was a problem all the time. If you were escorting American bombers, for example, daytime, we had daytime job. We never escorted your bombers. They were night. Then of course, how long can you follow them? And you've got to go back, and if you were follow them to the extreme with your extra tanks, and something happened, you dropped what was empty almost, how did you get back, you know? Those were problems.
What did they teach you at the operational training unit when you arrived in Britain and you went to OTU? What were the subjects?
Well, it was a basic conversion to the type of airplane. That was very quickly done, as far as with background as we had, was no problem whatsoever. We came from, that was no problem. But it was tactics. It was getting acquainted to the flying control side and the direction of the command post of the group headquarters, the operational rooms and so on. In fact, to work under the British system, the Royal Air Force system. And we were just worked into it like any other British squadron. No difference whatsoever.
What were the basic?
We were trade tested. The ground crews and so on were trade tested in the same way as you had it in your system. And we had to qualify in exactly the same way as pilots were concerned.
What was the basis of the tactics? Was it mainly training for air to air?
Yeah, for
fighting. Not for ground attack.
No, not for ground attack. Mm. We had some shooting, yes. We delivered weapon with the cannons. In the beginning, we had machine guns, you know. We didn't have cannons, but we got cannons later. That was an upgrading of the airplane. So we had that. And after all, it was only, how long was it? 40 days, I think it was.
But where did you go then after your operational training?
Then I went to 331 Squadron.
Yes, where
were
they?
Which was then established at Kettrick.
What was their role at that time?
That was air defence. Of course, there's, yeah, that was air defence. Mm. We've come to early summer 41. The squadron, the Northrop squadron at Iceland, were already going. And so on. So this was number two and got into action, and after a little while we became operational
at Kettrick,
mm-hmm. Yes, and we stayed there for a little while, and then we were moved up to Castletown, and very north of Scotland, and after a while there, this was mainly then protection of the shipping, convoy patrols and air defense, those two main things. And after that, we were moved up to Skibbereen at Orkneys, and the and stayed there all the winter. The squadron stayed there all the winter.
While you were at Kettering, were there any operations? Did the Germans attempt any raids in that part of England?
Yes, we went down to West Hartlepool.
You did?
To get a little closer to the coast and then reach a little further out.
So you're going out into the North Sea.
Yeah, it was North Sea. And there were German reconnaissance planes, and there were German bombers, the Dornier and the Henkel. They came to probe the coast and find the convoys and do things like that. And we had a fair amount of intercepts and so on, not all of them successful, but they were close and things like that. And
did they bring fighter escorts with them when they were doing those? Did the Germans have fighter escorts?
No, that was out of range. So they came. But you know, the Dornier especially was a very fast airplane. The Hurricane to catch up with it was was just well, the I was taken out. I was up at Orkneys too with the 331 for about a month, then I was posted to first to 17th Squadron at Elgin, which had Hurricanes. I wasn't there very long. I was there about a month, I suppose. This was late fall, 41. And then I was posted to 615 at Manston. And this is where Squadron Leader Gillam came in. And Wing Commander Flying, Dutch Hugo, who was a South African too. Tremendous fellow.
Was that still an active sector around Manston? Was it very active when you were at Manston?
Yes, the squadron was really to stop German sea transport along the French coast. And they had stacked into their convoys anti-aircraft vessels with no other purpose than to keep us away. And they did that very effectively, but we were also effective, I would say. So that was a going concern on who went out and who came back, what was the end result of the whole thing. We had big losses at that squadron. It was Churchill's hour, and we always got the message from Churchill when we had success or when it was too bad. And he followed, but that, of course, is a staff job. He came down visiting us once. It was a great, great thing, the old man. I wasn't really... he was interspersed with us pilots and so on.
Yes.
He wanted to go and see the ground crew and their job, and the airplane and so on, too. He was in a siren suit and all that. Big cigar. Real Churchill way. And he went out. I didn't follow him then, but so I got only the story from people who did, Gillam and Hugo. Der Tribune. And he came there, but as he got close to the airplane, he met his top man. That was a flight sergeant. "Sir, stop there! Stop there!" You know, Churchill apparently had wondered who could talk to him like that, you know. So he made one more step, and he said, "Sir, I said, stop there!" So he stopped, and he understood what it was. He took away his cigar, and then he went to look at the coffee. Yeah. So, but he was very amused when he came back to us in the squadron. He had really found a fellow who told him no undue words how to behave.
What sort of convoys were the Germans? What ships were in these convoys, and how many would there be in these coastal?
It could be quite a large thing.
Yeah.
And of course, of course, at night time we couldn't get them.
Mm.
So that was then the Navy had to do most of the job. We could follow it until late into darkness and took them early in the morning.
Mm.
So we couldn't stop it altogether, but they, it was a mixture of ships, and for all purposes, I'm sure. And as I say, they were important for the Germans to get through, and important for us to stop.
What sort of anti-aircraft weapons did they have? And
20 millimeters pom-poms, 40 millimeters.
Mm. Were these on the merchant ships, or were they on naval ships?
No, they were on naval ships, yes. And they were pretty trained people.
Mm.
There could have been cannons on the merchant ships too, I wouldn't say for sure.
Mm.
We developed a special technique which proved very useful. It was to get into line abreast when you had spotted the thing, and then you got the wings on the line abreast, sort of ahead. And so you went straight on, and you came in from all directions at the same time, sort of embraced the targets. You couldn't come from the other side, of course, but you could you could sort of get in. So that bewildered the gunners on the ships, and they spread out there. They couldn't follow one so well because they were coming from. It's very important to have that synchronized. But even more important in that context was to synchronize ourselves with the Blenheim bombers, because we had Blenheim bombers on the Manston airfield as well. And they were to deliver bombs, but they couldn't come in unless we had really quelled the guns.
Mm.
They were absolutely easy prey if we didn't coordinate that well. So we had to come in just so that everything was quietened down on the defense side, and then they would go through. And we felt that we had losses, but my God, that squadron of Blenheims, they had a beating. That was tremendous, you know.
What weapons were you using? Were you still equipped with a machine gun at that stage?
No, we had 20 millimeter cannons at that time, and in fact we got four of them. So we were pretty strong.
Formidable firepower.
Yes. And of course the wings on the Hurricanes, they could take that sort of thing. Yeah. And the airplane was a tremendous fine platform to shoot from. And but you know, you approach these sort of things, you see these red balls coming all over you like that. You've got no alternative just to go on. That's it.
How close would you get before you could open fire effectively? What would be your range?
You shouldn't open it too early.
Mm.
Also, you have the sink rate of the bullet itself, so
yes.
you don't want to hit the water ahead of the thing.
Mm.
And you look at your sights, of course. You shouldn't wait. You shouldn't. But when they start shooting, and you see these balls coming by and so on, you get pretty tempted to start shooting back. You know?
Yeah.
So it's you get. I wouldn't say you get used to it, but you sure get the knack of timing, and to be effective. And you keep your fire really until you're almost inside the target. You know, so the masts and so on is really the problem, not to be hooked up in.
Yes.
That was the same with the ground targets too. You really got to get into the target
as close as possible.
As close as possible. And when you come back and you have the red camera on each plane, of course, you play off the camera and so on. You can see around the airplane crossing in the same fire line as you shoot yourself. You know, it gets a scary sort of idea about it.
What altitude would you be when you attack? Did you attack at low level going in?
You fly in at very low level, and then when you know your target is reasonably within sight, and you have a warning about their position almost, then you climb up so that you get, and then you bring the sight forward, and then you are in for attack. It's very important that you get fairly straight on your target. This business of changing a formation, especially when they lie abreast, it's a shaky do, you know. So you've got to, but then you mustn't get so high that you are watched on the radar on the other side, and the ships are warned and all that sort of thing. They are ready for you, and I suppose they are ready anyway, but more ready. Or they could bring fighters out or something like that.
Did you encounter fighters over the channel from the
not
side?
I never did on the 615. I have the privilege to be offered Dutch Huger's flight while I was there. He was posted off to Spitfires and so on. And I was even asked to if I wanted a flight, Spitfire flight. But I liked to be with Gillam, and I liked. I thought the job was very purposeful, and so on. So I said I'd. Very happy about the flight, but I stay with the squadron. And, many people thought that was a funny decision, but that's the way you do it.
How many aircraft did you have in your flight?
The flight was, we had about 18 airplanes, so the flight was about 9. But you didn't fly always with that.
You
could fly with 4, you could fly with. Usually you mustered the whole squadron, and you were flight within the squadron.
Maximum
and then you attacked with 9 airplanes. Would it be?
How did you?
No, with 9, with 12 airplanes. 12 was normal. 12 was normal. In 3 groups.
How did you?
Sections.
Control? Did you control through the radio telephone while you were in the air?
No, it was absolutely silence on radio. Absolute silence. So lining up from your sit in the airplane, and there's no radio at all. Nothing to warn. They were listening in. Things. Nothing to warn that we were lining up or anything of that kind. Never did.
So was this method of attacking ships, did it become a drill that you went through every time you made an attack?
If it became a...
Did it become a drill, this method of attacking, with the wings going out and forward? And
yes, you can say that.
How did that develop? Did it just develop naturally through practice?
No, I remember I discussed that very much. And the business of... three flights or four each was an established way the Air Force used to fly. It was a good way of controlling the number of airplanes. You have 3 section leaders and you had one squadron commander. So that was, but the business of forming in this, there again I was fairly happy. We used the training also on the ground. In the sense that you had this blizzard on the airport, and you were running up. You had squadron lined up the pilot and so on. You got new pilots in to show them. You run up. You say the target is in the inside the blizzard, and you run up on the blizzard and form on the top. It was a good way of demonstrating just exactly.
How
you wanted it, and how the people on the outside should put on full throttle to go ahead and so on. So you got that drilled in pretty well.
So you trained, you talked about it on the ground and then did it in the air.
Yeah. It's hard to train well in the air on that sort of thing. Well, you can, but this business of having there and then meet there and talk about it and go back and do it again, you know, it's a good way of doing it. Mm. It gets into your system and you... The squadron, 615, of course, we were four Norwegians on that squadron. There were a number of French. The Gaulle came down to see us too, to see the French. And they didn't want to talk with him.
Huh?
You know, it was this business with the Gaulle, Vichy, and Gauchner, what the French are peculiar, charming, but peculiar, you know. And they didn't want there was.
Did they say why they didn't want to talk?
No, I think they just thought that the sort of French attitudes at time and the behavior in London and so on. They had a sort of they were in a squadron, and you mind you, that was for us too. We were highly critical often of our own efforts in London and so on. Mm. But that is typical with young people too. Mm.
Young people and armies.
There you are, you're on squadron, you take risks, you know your days are, you know, chances play anyway. And you have people sitting in there, you know, doing whatever they're doing and so on. But we were quite apart. We were much closer. We were never apart from Royal Air Force. Mm. We always had a tremendous... faith and trust in the way they handled the deforms, they were operational orders and all that sort of thing. And however bad they might look from a risk point of view, you know, you always felt that they were founded and good and solid and worth it. We never had problem with the Royal Air Force in that respect.
When you did your attacks on the ships, were you trying to suppress the air defence on them?
Mainly the guns.
So you were aiming at the anti-aircraft guns?
Yeah, but then on a smaller ship, you know, you aim at the ship.
Yes.
But if they shoot, and you see they shoot, I mean, you just see the flame of the muscle and so on. Yes. Then, of course, you get a more fixed point.
Yeah.
So that's it. Mm. So you don't do it on the bow or on the stern, and you've got a fixed point. But we didn't have bombs, for example. You know.
How long were you with that?
Well, the squadron moved just before Christmas. Mm. I suppose I was with the squadron about 5 months, six weeks or now, almost 2 months at Manston. Then we were shaken out and sent to Wales. Mm. And as I said, I was flight commander at the time, before we left, actually. We went to Wales and were there for a while. And then I was... Wales was an interesting place, but it was quite a different sort of life for us.
Yes.
Air defence, yeah. Mm. And the... naval or the merchant routes up to inside the Irish Straits, Manchester and up that way, of course, was fairly trafficked. There was a lot of traffic there, Atlantic traffic, and coming up, coming down, and coming up south of Ireland, and north of Cornwall and Wales. So patrolling all that area down towards the French coast was the main purpose. And we did that, yes. And then there the German Air Force was fairly active, not only on reconnaissance, but also they had range for at least the 110 fighter plane.
Measurement 110.
Yeah, mm-hmm. 110. Which had longer range.
Yes.
So the activity was on, but it was a rest place compared to Manston, where we came from. It certainly was.
Did you have many interceptions when you were in Wales? Were you going up every day to...
No, I wouldn't say every day, but we had, yes. It was a fairly isolated angle, was the name of the airport. It was, as I go. And it was winter, of course. And I had a bad crash landing up there once. It was a technical reason. I was off York, out in the sea patrolling and so on, and suddenly got a red light on the fuel, and it was of course a question of landing into land, and then you probably end up prisoner. Or trying to get back, and I tried to get back, and I almost got back. I didn't quite reach where I feel. Mm. And of course, there is a steep cliff going right down there. So when the airplane hit just about the cliff and up the slope, it stopped right where the airfield began. But the airplane was pretty well written off. It hit the ground pretty
very hard. Yeah. Were you hurt?
No, I was all right.
You were all right.
I was all right.
Yeah. You know what had gone wrong with the fuel?
No, it was a nipple on the fuel lead.
So it was blocked?
Simple turns loose, and in the end it fell off. Mm. But all the way over the sea, there was pretty rough wind that time, and the sea was going pretty rough. And I must say that you were wondering whether you got there or not. That's the way it is. Mm. But anyway, when I had been there for a while, I was posted to number 2 Norwegian Squadron.
This is the first specific Norwegian squadron?
No, 331 was the first specific Norwegian.
Right. Mm.
Now, I was assigned then to 332 Squadron, which was also at Kattrick. And the reason, really, for me being sent to 615 was to train me for the command post.
Yes.
From the Air Force point of view.
Mm.
And the squadron was set up in January 42. And we stayed at Kattrick for about 5 months.
Mm. What were you doing while you were at Kattrick?
In the beginning, I was flight commander. Mm. And then the squadron commander, who had also been the first squadron commander, 331, name was Bull, Major Bull. I took over from him after about a month or something. Mm-hmm. Left for headquarters. And so I had a squadron up there. It was second squadron. same procedure. They came from OTUs and the training establishment on the ground crew and all that. Then the squadron got going. We had a sore moment when 331 squadron came from Orkinus on the way down to Manston, an 11 group, and we were still at Kattrick. This was in May 42. And then, but then 1 month later we followed. So then the Norwegian wing was established at North Wales.
Ah, then Essex, isn't it, in North Wales?
In June.
Yes.
In June. 42.
So then you've got two Norwegian squadrons, at North Wales.
Yeah.
What was the role of the wing at that time? What was the main
employment? It was a mixture of things. Mm. Then, of course, we got into what we said, the real game. Mm. I'm then excluding 615 as myself is concerned, but the Norwegians got into the real game. But there is a couple of things which might be interesting. Now, I've got to watch your time. Mm-hmm. In May 41, the agreement between the British and Norwegian political side was decided, was drawn up on the use of Norwegian forces, defense agreement. And it was done by the foreign minister, Halten Koot. No, it was done when Halten Koot left our Norwegian government.